Back in on Canuck Central. This hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by BC Liquor. Until May 31st, explore their exceptional selection and save like $7 on 36 packs of Old Style Pilsner. Visit your nearest BC Liquor today. Enjoy responsibly. It is Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Before we get into the mailbag, Sat, a local team playing a big final this weekend. Vancouver Whitecaps going up against Cruz Azul in the Champions Cup finale. Whitecaps are 15 games undefeated right now in all competitions. It's been a bunch of draws lately, but they are still undefeated in their last 15 going into this one. It's kind of a big deal. I guess you would say the biggest game in Whitecaps history coming Sunday night at 6 o'clock for the Vancouver Whitecaps against Cruz Azul.
Huge. It's absolutely massive, and I wish the Whitecaps nothing but the best. I'm going to be glued to the TV watching that game on Sunday.
At the Estadio Olimpico Universitario. Or probably Universitario. I don't know.
So now you're doing Spanish?
Yeah. I mean, Spanish and Italian, very similar. I don't know if you know this.
Yes. Similar, yes.
They are both derived from Latin, you know. So, all right. Enough of this. Let's go to the mailbag. The mailbag on Canuck Central, where you ask questions for us on Canucks, life, otherwise, whatever it may be. Producer Zach Clark has the questions compiled for today. Zach, what do we got?
Well, starting off with Justin in East Van asking, after a successful playoff run, what should the Canucks do with Artur Shelov for next season?
I guess the concern for Justin and a lot of Canucks fans is that Artur Shelov he would have to pass through waivers next year. And
yeah,
given the way he's played in these playoffs and that he is, one of the higher end goalie prospects of the last couple of years, would he automatically get picked up? The thing I always wonder is, during training camp and preseason, it tends to be a time where you can sneak guys through waivers, especially if it happens on a day where there's multiple goalies that end up having to pass through at the same time.
Yeah, and so with that being the case, the max value for a player who is waiver eligible soon is usually around a fifth round pick. At the high level, right? We saw the Canucks get Derek Pouliot in a trade that was for a fifth-round pick, I believe it was, but he was going to be waiver-eligible soon, so they got ahead of it and got him. Usually it's at that level, maybe slightly at a fourth-round pick, but that's for guys that are sought after, kind of, right? Where they know the team is likely putting that player on waivers because they have a numbers problem, and that's where the Canucks come in. So unless the Canucks have injuries, they're forced, to your point, to put Shelov on waivers. So what's the value in trade? Is anybody actually giving you a fourth and a fifth? Is it at best a seventh round pick? And if that's what you're looking at, to your point, aren't you better off trying to sneak him down yourself and have the depth?
I think that's probably the best way of looking at it. We get a lot of questions about goalies and what could goalies get you in trade. We've done it with Demko in the past, and it's just, goalie trade values are never really all that high. There are always tend to be lower than what you might think. And even though Shelov's, played well in the playoffs last year for the Vancouver Canucks and all that, like, a team is still having to make a projection on Shelov's and isn't going to know that he is very reliable at the NHL level. Mm-hmm. So, that's where it becomes a really tough to sell him as being more than anything what you just mentioned as far as trade value is concerned. Canucks are going to need a third goalie, even if they return with Demko and Lankinen next year, and you want a third goalie that you'd feel pretty comfortable with, and I think Artur Shelov fits that bill.
After watching these playoffs, what do you think the Canucks need to add more of, finesse or grit? That's from Tyler.
Both.
All of the above.
They could use a little bit of both. A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
the Canucks are in an interesting spot where they have to say yes to both. They can't say no to either. It's like you need, you know, one. If you get one, you still need the other, right? So the Canucks need a bit of both of that here, right? I don't think that's there's any question.
You know, in a perfect world, you'd add a couple of players that have both in them, but those players don't really exist a bunch, right? We talked about Alex Tuch earlier. There's questions of whether or not he'd be available in trade from the Buffalo Sabres. You know, if Buffalo really goes down the path of trading Alex Tuch, guess what? You know, there's going to be a lot of teams that would love to have one of the few power forwards that can score quite a bit in the league. So it is a lot, you know, but they do need both. They definitely need to add more offense to this group. They lost JT Miller, who brought some of that finesse and the skill at the sandpaper at the same time, the grit at the same time that he brought the offensive talent, the offensive gifts that he had. They've got to fill both of those spots in their top six and throughout their forward group.
From Whale Enthusiast, which Western Conference team will fall out of the playoffs for the Canucks to get in next year?
Ooh. Are you sold on the Blues? I'm not sure I'm sold on the Blues.
Death taxes and sad hating on the Blues. That's it really happens every single year.
I'm not sure I'm sold on them. I'm also not you mentioned the Kings.
Yep.
Like, if Kopitar and Doughty take a step back or half a step back, how much is that going to impact them? And let's say they can't keep Gavrikov.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll do other things, right?
But yeah. It is a very competitive Western Conference. The teams that... I feel like Winnipeg is kind of just a perennial playoff team. You know, they won't be as good as they were this year, but they're not going to be bad enough to completely fall out of the postseason. Dallas and Colorado... Now, Dallas doesn't have a ton of cap space to get better, but they are still a very young roster, and they have Mikko Rantanen and Miro Heiskanen. They're going to be fine. So, like, those teams, it's very unlikely that they miss, you know, unless there's, like, an unbelievable rash of injuries like we saw happen to Vegas the year that they acquired Jack Eichel that forced them to miss the playoffs. But those are more of an anomaly than anything else. The betting favorites are Minnesota and St. Louis. And that's pretty much the list. So, and the LA Kings. So, you know, it's one of those three teams. I am betting that it would be, I'd say Minnesota before I say St. Louis.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Minnesota, they have some young guys coming. They're going to have some space finally. I don't know. I don't know if I'm out on them quite yet.
They get so much cap space this offseason.
Yeah, if they finally have that flexibility. Now, I don't know what they're going to spend it on, but still.
Apparently not Brock Besser, so we'll see. And they're trading Marco Rossi, who's not good enough to get $7 million a year, according to them. So.
Now, from Big Sven, if the Canucks are shopping Pettersson, which team could present a realistic trade package?
Ooh, okay. So... the Sabres could put together a realistic trade package, right?
Yes.
They were interested. Are they willing to go back to that table?
Mm.
Jarmo Kekalainen is joining them, but he's not the decision maker. He's just somebody else that comes in part of the organization. But are they willing to do what it takes to get Pettersson?
What would it take? Tage Thompson?
Tage, probably, yeah. I mean, you would have to get, because they don't need, I mean, need D, but I mean, they probably would do it for, if you know how they were considering if they would have done it, but like there was some talk with the whole Cousins and Byram type of deal.
Yeah.
Would they do two forwards for Pettersson potentially? Like, say, Paterka and somebody else?
I don't know. Does Pettersson have a lot more trade value than Tage Thompson does right now?
No, he doesn't. I'm saying, like, one for one. Like, the Canucks do one for one for Tage Thompson, given how everything has gone, they might consider it pretty strongly. I don't think Buffalo's doing that, though. I don't think they want to trade Tage Thompson, right?
Yeah.
So, like,
especially to add an extra $4-plus million on your cap, too.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then if you're looking at, say, would Norris and Paterka do it? Would they do that? Would the Canucks do Norris and Paterka?
That's something that, maybe you could get a little bit more interested in.
I don't know if Buffalo's doing that, though, right?
Like, yeah,
I
mean, that's a lot to give up for a guy who scored 45 points last year.
But that's a team that it would be realistic as far as they have the assets to throw at you to make it appealing in some regard. But it just comes down to, are they actually willing to go that far? And I'm not sure I see another team right now that's willing to actually give you something worthwhile, right?
Like, I know people have thought about Detroit, but I don't know what the Canucks would want from Detroit necessarily.
Well, I think Detroit could make it interesting. I think if you get, say, Marco Kasper as a centerpiece, now you would want to have more, but could that be an interesting centerpiece to build it around? A guy that, you know, played last year, had 37 points in 77 games as a rookie, 6'1" center, defensive chops, skates well. Like, if he's a centerpiece of that deal, would the Canucks consider it? It's kind of hard not to consider. Let's say you get that and, you know, another player and, you know, let's say somebody would, you know, term or whatever. And
that's a future trade, prospect, though, mostly, right?
Kind of, but you're actually getting a high level asset who's still young, right?
Yeah.
And you have control over, plus you get a lot of flexibility if you're moving that money. You have to take something back in return, but I could see Detroit. Like, I think if they have the pieces to do it, and it doesn't have to be Larkin.
There are a lot of teams, I think, that could fit the bill as far as, like, putting together a package for Pettersson, because realistically his value isn't where it was after the season that he's had and the contract that he does hold. You know, like the Islanders could make a pitch, right? If they want to give up maybe a Barzal, if that would be something both teams were interested in. Columbus could make a pitch with all of their young talent. So I do believe that there are multiple teams that could make a pretty enticing pitch for Elias Pettersson. I wonder if those offers would be out there for Elias Pettersson.
For sure. I think that the biggest question, ultimately, you're right, comes down to is that actually going to be available to you, right? Mm-hmm. But if you look at it from teams that would have the motivation to add that type of player, Detroit would fit that bill, so would Buffalo, and they would have the assets in theory to make it happen. Now, you know, are they actually willing to pony that up? And I'm with you. I'm not quite sure they are.
Next.
What's one sneaky pickup for the bottom six you'd like to see the Canucks chase from Berkey Takes?
Do you have one on top of your
Yeah. I do not have one at the top of my mind.
Like, for a free agency, is that kind of what they're saying? Like, it has to be free agency because trades are just always impossible to kind of figure out, right?
Yeah. I mean, a personal favorite of mine has always been Rasmus Kupari. And I know somebody was texting in about him earlier today. I don't know, like, offer sheet wise, I guess he might fall under, like, the no compensation offer sheet that you could go through if you really wanted to test the waters that way, or do the least amount of compensation that the offer sheet's setup allows. He's with Winnipeg Jets. I've just always liked his profile as a player. He's big. He's right shot. Skates well. I think he can PK a little bit. So he could fit as, sort of a bottom six center for a team looking to acquire. And I've always liked him as a player. So that would be one that comes to mind immediately.
That's not a bad one. I don't know if he gets there ultimately, but Justin Danforth from the Columbus Blue Jackets, if he gets to free agency.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That is sneaky.
Justin Danforth definitely would be sneaky.
Yeah, he's not the biggest guy. I know you guys are going to, I'm surprised you didn't say anything about it. You actually want a smaller type of player. But
I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, but greedy little guy. I'm just saying, greedy little player.
Why do you love players 5'8 and 5'9 out of Columbus, but you have so much hate for Connor Garland?
Yeah. Nick Blankenberg or Justin Danforth, sign sat up.
I'm paying this guy like maybe $1 million at most, and he's going to give you like pretty similar production to like he's going to give you like let's say you trade Nils Höglander and you want to have a similar type of guy like that's going to cost like a fraction of it. That's Justin Danforth. Like give you like a 10 goals, play gritty, do a lot of different things for you down your lineup, and it's not going to cost you anything.
In a similar vein to the Kupari thread, should the Canucks be utilizing RFAs? And Spencer Rose provides a few examples like Marco Rossi, JJ Paterka, or Morgan Geekie.
I don't think, like, as far as offer sheets go, I don't think the Canucks are going to be signing anybody to an offer sheet, especially those guys where the Canucks don't own their own first third round pick, so they'd have to reacquire it to be able to complete one of those types of moves. But could you make a trade for Marco Rossi or JJ Paterka before, you know, you have to extend them an offer sheet, those kinds of things? Absolutely.
Well, yeah, you can actually pay more. Like, I mean, the thing is, you don't. If a team knows an offer sheet is coming, right? And they know, let's say they know Team B has an offer sheet coming. Well, Team D might just offer a little bit more.
Yeah.
And be like, hey, that offer sheet's coming. You're not going to, you know, match it. We'll give you the extra asset.
Yeah.
And just give them to us. Like, we'll give you, like, you know, whatever, right?
With Paterka, Buffalo is already, like, aware that teams might be lining up to talk to Paterka if. You know, he reaches July 1 without a contract. So the way it works, you know, like offer sheet, the player has to sign it. So you negotiate with the player and his agent. And if they say, okay, yeah, I'm down for that, I'll sign it. And then team that owns their rights has 7 days to potentially match it. Now with Paterka, like if he doesn't want to end up in Buffalo, like if he wants to move on from Buffalo, maybe signing an offer sheet isn't the best way to go about doing that. Like you'd prefer a trade rather than sign. You don't want Buffalo to have the option to match if you want to leave that team. So you prefer a trade in that scenario. And that's something I think you got to keep in mind. And one of the reasons I think people forget as to why offer sheets don't happen more often like they did with Broberg and Holloway last year.
Yeah, and I mean, there has to be a desire from a player, like, right?
Yeah.
Like you're right. If the player doesn't have a desire, it doesn't matter.
So for Marco Rossi, like his projection is at $7 million by some of the analytical websites that project contracts. His offer sheet compensation would be a first and a third round pick. From what we've heard, it doesn't even sound like Minnesota's looking for that. Maybe they're looking for a late first-round pick or an equivalent prospect or roster player that kind of has similar value to that. So you might not have to pay that high of a price is what the offer sheet suggests for a player like Marco Rossi. It's really interesting with him because, I mean, he's young. He's scored a bunch in these last couple of years. You'd think, you know, for a 23-year-old young center, teams would be all over that. But, you know, the size profile and all of that. And I think a wonder as to why Minnesota isn't too keen on paying Marco Rossi is something that I think people are trying to figure out right now as Marco Rossi is available. Because it's not often 23-year-old centers that have scored 60 points are available to in trade.
Yeah, exactly. Right now, again, like part of it is just he's not the biggest player. And if you look at his production, like we mentioned yesterday, like, you know, the past few days, he didn't ride percentages. He didn't have like the Kuzmenko year, right? It's not like his PDO was sky high. But when you started looking at, you know, his shooting percentage and the shooting percentage while he was on the ice and some of the things that were going his way, it's like, okay, like it was very favorable, right? So how much projection can you put on top of somebody who had very favorable percentages plus was playing with Boldy and Kaprizov for the entire season, pretty much, right? For the majority of their time. And not, you know, you good players play together. You can't take anything away from them. But it's not an obvious projection. He's not great in the face-off circle, even though he plays, you know, to your point, a gritty game and all those things. But can he actually be a center that can drive play and be productive and be good on his own end and do all the dirty work? Or is he ultimately going to be a guy who ends up being on the wing in the future? And if you're a diminutive winger, what's your overall value, right? And that, I think that's where it comes down to. He's very talented. He's very good. His production has been very good. But ultimately, how useful is he to get top dollar from somebody?
It is a pretty big projection for a team to make. You have to think about the trade acquisition, right? The trade cost. And then on top of that, the contract you have to give the player as well, as he's apparently looking for something in the $7 million range.
All right. And if all Sportsnet 650 staff were dropped into a Hunger Games style arena, who is coming out on top?
Hunger Games style.
Hunger Games style. I mean, I just would bet on myself, even with my wonky knee. But I think I just bet on myself. I don't know if anybody else is like such an overwhelming favorite. I know some of the young guys, right? Like maybe, but
I don't
know if anybody's
Ben.
Ben, maybe. I don't know if he's got the mean streak in him. Yeah. Elon, maybe.
I'm going with myself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Bet on yourself.
Yeah. I could totally do this. Sorry, guys. But that's the way it works.
Yeah, you'd be in trouble.
And to look at some football, after unveiling Jeremy Frimpong to replace Trent, if the rumors about Florian Wirtz and Milos Kerkez are true, does Liverpool already win the transfer window?
It's
funny they won the league without doing much in the transfer window last year.
Yeah, no. but they had to replace Trent, right?
Yeah,
so they,
yeah.
You know, and that's funny because I'd be like, well, I mean, they're replacing it with somebody else who's not good defensively, but it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's playing the Trent. I saw a lot of people be like, well, you can't defend. Look at him. I'm like, well, Trent Alexander gets walked all the time, right?
Yeah.
By people, and it's like, no, it doesn't matter. They still won the league. So I'm not sure that matters. I actually like Kerkez a lot. I think he's really a really, really solid midfielder, and he kind of fits what Liverpool would be. I'm not sure I want to anoint him as winning the offseason already, you know, but...
Still too early to say. We'll see what Man City ends up doing. But yeah, Liverpool looking pretty good in the early stages of the Premier League offseason, which doesn't last very long, as we know.
Chelsea, decent start, got Liam Delap for 30
million.
There we go. You know, not bad. Good value.
Juventus is just going around offering part exchange deals. You want to take one of our guys that we want to get rid of, and maybe we'll give you an extra $5 million? It's not
going to work. They're trying to make trades. It's like when the Chelsea's ownership came, they're American, right? They came in like, why don't we make trades? Nobody makes trades in soccer. They went around and tried to trade their players, and they're like, nope, we don't make trades, man. Like, no, nobody makes trades. You got to buy and sell.
All right. That's going to do it for the mailbag here on a Friday. Busy weekend upcoming. We are on 3-5 Monday, as we'll be ahead of the Abbotsford Canucks and Texas Stars Game 3 on Monday, June the 2nd. Abbotsford plays tomorrow as well at the Abbotsford Center. You can check that one out, 7:00 on Sportsnet 650. And of course, the Vancouver Whitecaps have a big game on Sunday night against Cruz Azul. The Champions Cup on the line in what is being billed as the biggest game in franchise history for the Vancouver Whitecaps. So despite no Vancouver Canucks in the Stanley Cup playoffs, still a lot of local content on the sports front for all of you to consume this weekend. All right, for producers Zach and Eddie, my co-host Sat, I am Dan. You've been listening to Canuck Central.